Jess. A shout rips through the silence. A man's voice, then another voice, a woman's. I sit up in bed, listening hard, heart kicking against my ribs. It takes a second for me to work out that the sounds are coming from the courtyard, filtering through the windows in the main room. I check the alarm clock next to Ben's bed. 5 a.m., morning, just, but still dark. The man is shouting again. He sounds slurred, like he's been drinking. I creep across the main room to the windows and crouch down. The cat pushes its face into my thigh, mewing. Shh, I tell it. But I quite like the feel of its warm, solid body against mine. I peer into the courtyard. Two figures stand down there. One tall, one much smaller. The guy is dark-haired, and she's blonde. The long fall of her hair silver in the cool light of the courtyard's one lamp. He's wearing a parka with a fur rim that looks familiar, and I realize it's the guy I met outside the gate last night. Their voices get louder. They're shouting over one another now. I'm pretty sure I hear her say the word, police. At this, his voice changes. I don't understand the words, but there's a new hardness, a threat to his tone. I see him take a couple of steps towards her.
Laisse-moi,
she shouts, sounding different now too, scared rather than angry. He takes another step closer. I realize I'm pressed so close to the window that my breath has misted up the glass. I can't just sit here, listening, watching. He raises a hand. He's so much taller than her. A sudden memory. Mum, sobbing.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Over and over. Like the words to a prayer. I lift my hand to the window and slam it against the glass. I want to distract him for a few seconds, give her a chance to move away. I see both of them glance up in confusion, their attention caught by the sound. I duck down, out of sight. When I look back out again, it's just in time to see him pick something up from the ground, something big and bulky and rectangular. With a big, petulant shove, he throws it towards her, at her. She steps back and it explodes at her feet. I see it's a suitcase, spilling clothes everywhere. Then he looks straight up at me. There's no time to crouch down. I understand what his look means. I've seen you. I want you to know that. Yeah, I think, looking right back. And I see you, dickhead. I know your sort. You don't scare me. Except all the hairs on the back of my neck are standing to attention, and the blood's thumping in my ears. I watch as he walks over to the statue and shoves it viciously off its plinth so that it topples to the ground with a crash. Then he makes for the door that leads back into the apartment building. I hear the slam echoing up the stairwell. The woman is left on her knees in the courtyard, scrabbling around for the things that have fallen out of the suitcase. Another memory. Mum on her knees in the hallway, begging. Where are the other neighbours? I can't be the only one who heard the commotion. It's not a choice to go down and help. It's something I have to do. I snatch up the keys, run down the couple of flights of stairs and out into the courtyard. The woman starts as she spots me. She's still on her hands and knees, and I see that her eye makeup has run where she's been crying. Hey, I say softly. Are you okay? In answer, she holds up what looks like a silk shirt. It's stained with dirt from the ground. Then, shakily, in heavily accented English, I came to get my things. I tell him it's over, for good. And this is what he does. He's a son of a bitch. I never should have married him. Jesus, I think. This is why I know I'm better off single. Mom had exceptionally terrible taste in men. My dad was the worst of all of them, though. Supposedly a good guy. A real fucking bastard. Would have been better if he had disappeared off into the night like Ben's dad did before he was born. The woman's muttering under her breath as she shovels clothes into the suitcase. Anger seems to have taken over from fear. I go over and crouch down, help her pick up her things. High heels with long foreign names printed inside. A black silk lacy bra. A little orange sweater made out of the softest fabric I've ever felt. Merci, she says absent-mindedly. Then she frowns. Who are you? I've never seen you here before. I'm meant to be staying with my brother, Ben. Ben, she says, drawing out his name. She looks me up and down, taking in my jeans, my old sweater. He's your brother. Before him, I thought all Englishmen were sunburned, no elegance, bad teeth. I did not know they could be so beautiful, so charmant, so soigné. Apparently, there aren't enough words in English for how wonderful my brother is. She continues shoveling clothes into the suitcase, a violence to her movements, scowling every so often at the door into the apartment building. Is it so strange I got bored of being with a stupid fucking loser alcoholic? That I wanted a little flirtation? And d'accord, maybe I wanted to make Antoine jealous. Care about something other than himself. Is it such a surprise I started to look elsewhere? She tosses her hair over her shoulder in a shining curtain. It's quite impressive, being able to do that while crouched down picking your lacy underwear out of a gravel path. She looks towards the building and raises her voice, almost as though she wants her husband to hear. He says I only care about him because of his money. Of course I only care about him because of his money. It was the only thing that made it, how do you say, worthwhile. But now, she shrugs. Oh, it's not worth it. I pass her a silky electric blue dress, a baby pink bucket hat with Jacquemus printed across the front. Have you seen Ben recently? I ask. No, she says, raising an eyebrow at me like I might be insinuating something. Pourquoi? Why do you ask? He was meant to be here last night, to let me in, but he wasn't, and he hasn't been answering my messages. Her eyes widen, and then, under her breath, she murmurs something. I make out, Antoine, non, ce n'est pas possible. What did you say? Oh, no, rien, nothing. But I catch the glance she shoots towards the apartment building, fearful, suspicious even, and wonder what it means. Now she's trying to clip shut her bulging suitcase. Brown leather with some sort of logo printed all over it. But I see that her hands are trembling, making her fingers clumsy. Melt. Finally, it snaps closed. Hey, I say. Do you want to come inside? Call a cab? No way, she says fiercely. I'm never going back in there. I have an Uber coming. As if on cue, her phone pings. She checks it and gives what sounds like a sigh of relief. Ah, merci. Putain, he's here. I have to go. Then she turns and looks up at the apartment building. You know what? Fuck this evil place. Then her expression softens, and she blows a kiss towards the windows above us. But at least one good thing happened to me here. She pulls up the handle of the little case, then turns and begins stalking towards the gate. I hurry after her. What do you mean? Evil? She glances at me and shakes her head, mimes zippering her lips. I want my money from the divorce. Then she's out onto the street and climbing into the cab. As it pulls away, off into the night, I realize I never managed to ask whether what she had with my brother was ever more than a flirtation. I turn back towards the courtyard and nearly jump out of my skin. Jesus Christ, there's an old woman standing there, looking at me. She seems to glow with a cold white light like something off Most Haunted. But after I've caught my breath, I realize it's because she's standing beneath the outdoor lamp. Where the hell did she appear from? Excusez-moi, I say. Madame? I'm not even sure what I want to ask her. Who are you, maybe? What are you doing here? She doesn't answer. She simply shakes her head at me, very slowly. Then she's retreating backwards, towards that cabin in the corner of the courtyard. I watch as she disappears inside. As the shutters, which I see now must have been open, are quickly drawn closed.
Saturday, Nick. Second floor. I lean forward onto the handlebars of the Peloton bike, standing up in the saddle for the incline. There's sweat running into my eyes, stinging. My lungs feel like they're full of acid, not air. My heart hammering so hard it feels like I might be about to have a heart attack. I pedal harder. I want to push beyond anything I've done before. Tiny stars dance at the edges of my vision. The apartment around me seems to shift and blur. For a moment, I think I'm going to pass out. Maybe I do. Next thing I know, I'm slumped forward over the handlebars and the mechanism is whirring down. I'm hit by a sudden rush of nausea. I force it down, take huge gulps of air. I got into spinning in San Francisco. And bulletproof coffee, keto, Bikram. Pretty much any other fad the rest of the tech world was into, in case it provided any extra edge, any additional source of inspiration. Normally I'd sit here and do a class or listen to a TED talk. This morning wasn't like that. I wanted to lose myself in pure exertion, push through to a place where thought was silenced. I woke just after 5 a.m. But I knew I wasn't going to sleep, especially during that fight in the courtyard, the latest and worst of many. Getting on the bike seemed like the only thing that made sense. I climbed down from the saddle, a little unsteadily. The bike is one of the few items in this room besides my iMac and my books. Nothing up on the walls, no rugs on the floor. Partly because I like the whole minimal aesthetic. Partly because I still feel like I haven't really moved in, because I like the idea that I could up and leave at any moment. I pull the headphones out of my ears. It sounds like things have quietened down out there in the courtyard. I walk over to the window, the muscles in my calves twitching. I can't see anything at first. Then, My eye snags on a movement, and I see there's a girl down there opening the door to the building. There's something familiar about her, about the way she moves. Difficult to put my finger on, but my mind gropes around as if for a forgotten word. Now I see the lights come on in the apartment on the third floor. I watch her move into my line of sight, and I know that she has to be something to do with him. With my old mate, and as of very recently, neighbor, Benjamin Daniels. He told me about a younger sister once, half-sister, something of a tearaway, bit of a problem case, from his old life, however much he'd tried to sever himself from all that. What he definitely didn't tell me was that she was coming here. But then it wouldn't be the first time he's kept something from me, would it? The girl appears briefly at the windows, looking out. Then she turns and moves away, towards the bedroom, I think. I watch her until she's out of sight.
Jess. My throat hurts, and there's an oily sweat on my forehead. I stare up at the high ceiling above me and try and work out where I am. Now I remember. Getting here last night, that scene in the courtyard a couple of hours ago. It was still dark out, so I got back into bed afterwards. I didn't think I'd be able to sleep, but I must have drifted off. I don't feel rested, though. My whole body aches like I've been fighting someone. I think I was fighting someone, in my dream. The kind you're relieved to wake up from. It comes back to me in fragments. I was trying to get into a locked room, but my hands were clumsy, all fingers and thumbs. Someone, Ben, was shouting at me not to open the door. Do not open the door. But I knew I had to. Knew I didn't have any other choice. And then, finally the door was opening. And all at once, I knew he was right. Oh, why hadn't I listened to him? Because what greeted me on the other side? I sit up in bed. I check my phone. 8 a.m. No messages. A new day and still no sign of my brother. I call his number. Straight to voicemail. I listen to the voice note he left me again. With that final instruction.
Just ring the buzzer. I'll be up waiting for you.
And this time, I notice something strange. How his voice seems to cut off mid-sentence, like something has distracted him. And after this, there's a faint murmur of sound in the background. Words, maybe. But I can't make anything out. The uneasy feeling grows. I walk out into the main living space. The room looks even more like something from a museum in the light of day. You can see the dust motes hanging suspended in the air. And I've just spotted something I didn't see last night. There's a largish, lighter patch on the floorboards just a few feet before the front door. I walk towards it, crouch down. As I do, the smell, strange smell I noticed last night, catches me right at the back of the throat. A singe the nostrils chemical tang. Bleach. But that's not all. Something's caught here in the gap between the floorboards, glinting in the cold light. I try to wiggle it out with my fingers, but it's stuck fast. I go and get a couple of forks from the drawer in the kitchen, use them together to prise it loose. Eventually, I work it free. A long gilt chain unspools first, then a pendant. An image of a male saint in a cloak, holding a crook. Ben's Saint Christopher. I reach up and feel the identical texture of the chain around my neck. The heavy weight of the pendant. I've never seen him without it. Just like me, I suspect he never takes it off, because it came from Mum. Because it's one of the few things we have from her. Maybe it's guilt, but I suspect Ben's almost more sentimental about stuff like that than me. But here it is. And the chain is broken. Jess. I sit here trying not to panic, trying to imagine the rational explanation that I'm sure must be behind all this. Should I call the police? Is that what a normal person would do? Because it's several things now. Ben not being here when he said he would, and not answering his phone. The cat's blood-tinged fur. The bleach stain. The broken necklace. But more than any of this, it's the way it all feels. It feels wrong. Always listen to your inner voice, was Mum's thing. Never ignore a feeling. It didn't work out so well for her, of course. But she was right, in a way. It's how I knew I should barricade myself in my bedroom at night when I fostered with the Andersons, even before another kid told me about Mr. Anderson and his preferences. And way before that, before foster care even, it's how I knew I shouldn't go into that locked room, even though I did. I don't want to call the police, though. They might want to know things about you, a little voice says. They might have questions you don't want to answer. The police and I have never got on all that well. Let's just say I've had my share of run-ins. And even though he had it coming, what I did to that arsehole is, I suppose, technically still a crime. Right now, I don't want to put myself on their radar unless I absolutely have to. Besides, I don't really have enough to tell them, do I? A cat that might just have killed a mouse. A necklace that might just have been innocently broken. A brother who might have just fucked off yet again to leave me to fend for myself. No. It's not enough. I put my head in my hands, tried to think what to do next. At the same moment, my stomach gives a long, loud groan. I realise I can't actually remember the last time I ate anything. Last night, I'd sort of imagined I'd get here and Ben would fix me up some scrambled eggs or something. Maybe we'd order a takeaway. Part of me feels too queasy and keyed up to eat. But perhaps I'll be able to think more clearly with some food in my belly. I raid the fridge and cupboards, but besides half a pack of butter and a stick of salami, they're bare. One cupboard is different from all the rest. It's some sort of cavity with what looks like a pulley system. But I can't work out what it's for at all. In desperation, I cut off some of the salami with a very sharp Japanese knife that I find in Ben's utensil pot. But it's hardly a hearty breakfast. I pocket the set of keys I found in Ben's jacket. I know the code now. I've got the keys. I can get back into this place. The courtyard looks less spooky in the light of day. Past the ruins of the statue of the naked woman, the head separated from the rest, face up. Eyes staring at the sky. One of the flower beds looks like it has recently been redug, which explains that smell of freshly turned earth. There's a little fountain running too. I look over at the tiny cabin in the corner and see a dark gap between the closed slats of the shutters, perfect for spying on anything that's going on out here. I can imagine her watching me through it. The old woman I saw last night, the one who seems to live there. I take in the strangeness of my surroundings as I close the apartment's gate. the foreignness of it all. The crazily beautiful buildings around me, the cars with their unfamiliar number plates. The streets also look different in daylight, and much busier when I get away from the hush of the apartment building's cul-de-sac. They smell different too. Moped fumes and cigarette smoke and roasted coffee. It must have rained in the night as the cobbles are gleaming wet, slippery underfoot. Everyone seems to know exactly where they're going. I step into the street out of the way of one woman walking straight at me while talking on her phone and nearly collide with a couple of kids sharing an electric scooter. I've never felt so clueless, so like a fish out of water. I wander past shopfronts with their grills pulled down, wrought iron gates leading onto courtyards and gardens full of dead leaves, pharmacies with blinking neon green crosses. There seems to be one on every street. Do the French get sick more? Doubling back on myself and getting lost a couple of times. Finally, I find a bakery, the sign painted emerald green with gold lettering, Boulangerie, and a striped awning. Inside, the walls and the floor are decorated with patterned tiles, and it smells like burned sugar and melted butter. The place is packed. A long queue doubles back on itself. I wait, getting hungrier and hungrier, staring at the counter which is filled with all sorts of things that look too perfect to be eaten. Tiny tarts with glazed raspberries, eclairs with violet icing, little chocolate cakes with 1,000 very fine layers and a touch of what looks like actual gold on top. People in front of me are putting in serious orders. 3 loaves of bread, 6 croissants, an apple tart. My mouth waters. I feel the rustle of the notes I nicked from Ben's wallet in my pocket. The woman in front of me has hair so perfect it doesn't look real. A black, shining bob, not a strand out of place. A silk scarf tied around her neck, some kind of camel-coloured coat, and a black leather handbag over her arm. She looks rich, not flashy rich, the French equivalent of posh. You don't have hair that perfect unless you spend your days doing basically nothing. I look down and see a skinny, silver-coloured dog on a pale blue leather lead. It looks up at me with suspicious dark eyes. The woman behind the counter hands her a pastel-coloured box tied with a ribbon.
Voilà, Madame Meunier.
Merci. She turns, and I see that she's wearing red lipstick, so perfectly applied it might be tattooed on. At a guess, she's about 50, but a very well-preserved 50. She's putting her card back into her wallet. As she does, something flutters to the ground. A piece of paper. A banknote. I bend down to pick it up, take a closer look. Not a banknote, which is a shame. Someone like her probably wouldn't miss the odd 10 euros. It's a handwritten note, scribbled in big block capitals. I read, Double la prochaine fois, salope.
Donne-moi ça.
I look up. The woman is glaring at me, her hand outstretched. I think I know what she's asking, but she did it so rudely, so like a queen commanding a peasant, that I pretend not to understand. Excuse me? She switches to English.
Give that to me.
And then finally, as an afterthought, please? Taking my time about it, I hold out the note. She snatches it from my hand so roughly that I feel one of her long fingernails scrape at my skin. Without a thank you, she marches out through the door.
Excusez-moi, madame.
the woman behind the counter asks, ready to take my order. A croissant, please. Everything else is probably going to be too expensive. My stomach rumbles as I watch her drop it into the little paper bag. Two, actually. On the walk back to the apartment through the cold, grey morning streets, I eat the first one in big, ravenous bites, and then the second slower, tasting the salt of the butter, enjoying the crunch of the pastry and the softness inside. It's so good that I could cry, and not much makes me cry. Back at the apartment building, I let myself in through the gate with the code I learned yesterday. As I cross the courtyard, I catch the scent of fresh cigarette smoke. I glance up, following the smell. There's a girl sitting there, up on the fourth floor balcony, cigarette in her hand. A pale face, choppy dark hair, dressed in head-to-toe black from her turtleneck to the docks on her feet. I can see from here that she's young, maybe 19, 20. She catches sight of me looking back at her. I can see it in the way her whole body freezes. That's the only way I can describe it. You know something, I think, staring back. And I'm going to get you to tell me.
Mimi, fourth floor. She's seen me. The woman who arrived last night, who I watched this morning walking around in his apartment. She's staring straight at me. I can't move. In my head, the roar of static grows louder. Finally, she turns away. When I breathe out, my chest burns. I watched him arrive from here, too. It was August, nearly 3 months ago, the middle of the heat wave. Camille and I were sitting on the balcony in the junky old deck chairs she'd bought from a brocante shop, drinking Aperol spritzes, even though I actually kind of hate Aperol spritz. Camille often persuades me to do things I wouldn't otherwise do. Benjamin Daniels turned up in an Uber. Grey t-shirt, jeans, dark hair, longish. He looked famous somehow. Or maybe not famous, but special, you know? I can't explain it. But he had that thing about him that made you want to look at him. Need to look at him. I was wearing dark glasses, and I watched him from the corner of my eye, so it didn't seem like I was looking his way. When he opened the boot of the car, I saw the stains of sweat under his arms and where his t-shirt had ridden up. I also saw how the line of his tan stopped beneath the waistband of his jeans, where the paler skin started, an arrow of dark hair descending. The muscles in his arms flexed when he lifted the bags out of the trunk. Not like a jacked-up gym-goer, more elegant, like a drummer. Drummers always have good muscles. Even from here I could imagine how his sweat would smell. Not bad, just like salt and skin. He shouted to the driver.
Thanks, mate.
I recognized the English accent straight away. There's this old TV show I'm obsessed with, Skins, about all these British teenagers screwing and screwing up, falling in love. Mmm, said Camille, lifting up her sunglasses. Mais non, I said. He's really old, Camille. She shrugged. He's only 30-something. Oui, and that's old. That's like 15 years older than us. Well, think of all that experience. She made a V with her fingers and stuck her tongue out between them. I laughed at that. Oh, Burke, you're disgusting. She raised her eyebrows. Pas du tout. And you'd know that if your darling papa ever let you near any guys. Shut up. Oh, Mimi, I'm kidding. But you know, one day he's going to have to realize you're not his little girl any longer. She grinned, sucked up Aperol through her straw. For a second, I wanted to slap her. I nearly did. I don't always have the best impulse control. He's just a little protective. It was more than that, really. But I suppose I also never really wanted to do anything to disappoint Papa. Tarnish that image of me as his little princess. I often wished I could be more like Ami, though. So chill about sex. For her, it's just another thing she likes doing, like swimming or cycling or sunbathing. I'd never even had sex, let alone with two people at the same time, one of her specialities, or tried girls as well as boys. You know what's funny? Papa actually approved of her moving in here with me, said living with another girl might stop you from getting into too much trouble. Camille was in her smallest bikini, just three triangles of pale crocheted material that barely covered anything. Her feet were pressed up against the ironwork of the balcony, and her toenails were painted a chipped Barbie doll pink. Apart from her month in the South with friends, she'd sat out there pretty much every hot day, getting browner and browner, slathering herself in La Roche-Posay. Her whole body looked like it had been dipped in gold. Her hair lightened to the color of caramel. I don't go brown. I just burn. So I sat tucked in the shade like a vampire with my Françoise Sagan novel, wearing a big man's shirt. She leant forward, still watching the guy getting his cases out of the car. Oh my God, Mimi. He has a cat. How cute! Can you see it? Look in that carry basket. Salut, Minou! She did it on purpose, so he would look up and see us. See her. Which he did. Hey! She called, standing up and waving so hard that her nénés bounced around in her bikini top, like they were trying to escape. Bienvenue! Welcome! I'm Camille, and this is Merveille. Cute pussy. I was so embarrassed. She knew exactly what she was saying. It's the same slang in French, chat. Also, I hate that my full name is Merveille. No one calls me that. I'm Mimi. My mum gave me that name because it means wonder. And she said that's what my arrival into her life was. This unexpected but wonderful thing. But it's also completely mortifying. I sank down behind my book, but not so much that I couldn't still see him over the top of it. The guy shielded his eyes. Thanks, he called. He put up a hand, waved back. As he did, I saw again that strip of skin between his t-shirt and jeans.
I'm Ben, friend of Nick's. I'm moving into the third floor.
Camille turned to me. Well, she said in an undertone. I feel like this place has just got a lot more exciting. She grinned. Maybe I should introduce myself to him properly. Offer to look after the pussy if he goes away. I wouldn't be surprised if she's fucking him in a week's time, I thought to myself. It would hardly be a surprise. The surprising thing was how much I hated the thought of it. Someone's knocking on the door to my apartment. I creep down the hall, look through the peephole. Merde! It's her! The woman from Ben's apartment. I swallow, or try to. It feels like my tongue is stuck in my throat. It's hard to think with this roaring in my ears. I know I don't have to open the door. This is my apartment, my space, but the knock-knock-knock is incessant, beating against my skull until I feel like something in me is going to explode. I grit my teeth and open the door, take a step back. The shock of her face close up. I see him in her features straight away. But she's small, and her eyes are darker, and there's something, I don't know, hungry about her, which maybe was in him too, but he hid it better. It's like with her, all the angles are sharper. With him, it was all smoothness. She's scruffy too. Jeans and an old jumper with frayed cuffs. Dark red hair scragged up on top of her head. That's not like him either. Even in a grey t-shirt on a hot day, he looked kind of pulled together, you know? Like everything fit him just right. Hi, she says. She smiles, but it's not a real smile. I'm Jess. What's your name?
Mimi.
My voice comes out as a rasp. My brother, Ben, lives on the third floor. But he's, well, he's kind of disappeared on me. Do you know him at all? For a crazy moment, I think about pretending I don't speak English. But that's stupid. I shake my head. No, I didn't know him. Don't, I mean. My English, sorry, it's not so good. I can feel her looking past me, like she's trying to see her way into my apartment. I move sideways, try to block her view. So instead she looks at me, like she's trying to see into me. And that's worse. This is your apartment? She asks. Oui? Wow. She widens her eyes. Nice work if you can get it. And it's just you in here? My flatmate, Camille and me. She's trying to peer into the apartment again, looking over my shoulder. I was wondering if you'd seen him lately. Ben? No, he's been keeping his shutters closed. I mean, I realized too late that wasn't what she was asking. She raises her eyebrows. Okay, she says. But do you remember the last time you saw him generally about the place? It would be so helpful. She smiles. Her smile is not like his at all. But then no one's is. I realize she's not going to go unless I give her an answer. I clear my throat. I don't know. Not for a while. I suppose maybe a week? Quoi? Ce n'est pas vrai? That's not true. I turn to see Camille in just a camisole and her culotte, wandering into the space behind me. It was yesterday morning, remember, Mimi? I saw you with him on the stairs. Merde! I can feel my face growing hot. Oh, yes, that's right. I turn back to the woman in the doorway. So he was here yesterday? She asks, frowning, looking from me to Camille and back. You did see him? Uh-huh, I say. Yesterday, I must have forgotten. Did he say if he was going anywhere? No, it was only for a second. I picture his face as I passed him on the stairs. Hey, Mimi. Something up? That smile. No one's smile is like his. I can't help you, I say. Sorry. I go to close the door. He said he'd ask me to feed his kitty if he ever went away. Camille says, and the almost flirtatious way she says kitty reminds me of her cute pussy on the day he arrived. But he didn't ask this time. Really? The woman seems interested in this. So it sounds like... Maybe she's realized I'm slowly closing the door on her, because she makes a movement like she's about to step forward into the apartment. And without even thinking, I slam the door in her face so hard I feel the wood give under my hands. My arms are shaking. My whole body is shaking. I know Camille must be staring at me, wondering what's going on. But I don't care what she thinks right now. I lean my head against the door. I can't breathe. And suddenly I feel like I'm choking. It rushes up inside me, the sickness. And before I can stop it, I'm vomiting right onto the beautifully polished floorboards.
Sophie, penthouse. I'm coming up the stairs when I see her. A stranger inside these walls. It sends such a jolt through me that I nearly drop the box from the boulangerie. A girl, snooping around on the penthouse landing. She has no business being here. I watch her for a while before I speak. Bonjour, I say coolly. She spins around, caught out. Good. I wanted to shock her. But now it's my turn to be shocked. You. It's her from the boulangerie. The scruffy girl who picked up the note I dropped. Double la prochaine fois, salope. Double the next time, bitch. Who are you?
I'm Jess Hadley. I'm staying with my brother, Ben, she says quickly. On the third floor.
If you are staying on the third floor, then what are you doing up here? It makes sense, I suppose. Sneaking around in here as though she owns the place. Just like him.
I was looking for Ben.
She must realize how absurd this sounds, as though he might be hiding in some shadowy corner up here in the eaves, because she suddenly looks sheepish.
Do you know him? Benjamin Daniels?
That smile. A fox entering the henhouse. The sound of a glass smashing. A smear of crimson on a stiff white napkin.
Nicholas's friend, yes. Although I've only met him a couple of times. Nicholas? Is that Nick? I think Ben might have mentioned him. Which floor's he on?
I hesitate. Then I say, the second.
Do you remember when you last saw him about? She asks. Ben, I mean. He was meant to be here last night. I tried asking one of the girls, Mimi, on the fourth floor, but she wasn't too helpful.
I don't recall. Perhaps my answer sounds too quick, too certain. But then he keeps so much to himself, you know? Rather, what's the English expression? Reserved.
Really? That doesn't sound anything like Ben. I'd expect him to be friends with everyone in this building by now.
Not with me. That at least is true. I give a little shrug. Anyway, maybe he went away and forgot to tell you?
No, she says. He wouldn't do that.
Could I remember the last time I saw him? Of course I can. But I'm thinking now about the first time. About 2 months ago. The middle of the heat wave. I did not like him. I knew it straight away. The laughter, that's what I heard first. Vaguely threatening, in the way male laughter can be. The almost competitive nature of it. I was in the courtyard. I'd spent the afternoon planting in the shade. To others, gardening is a form of creative abandon. To me, it is a way of exerting control upon my surroundings. When I told Jack I wanted to take care of the courtyard's small garden, he did not understand. There are people we can pay to do it for us, he told me. In my husband's world, there are people you can pay for anything. The end of the day, the light fading, the heat still oppressive. I watched from behind the rosemary bushes as the two of them entered the courtyard. Nick first, then a stranger, wheeling a moped. Around the same age as his friend, but he seemed somehow older. Tall and rangy, dark hair. He carried himself well, a very particular confidence in the way he inhabited the space around him. I watched as Nick's friend plucked a sprig of rosemary from one of the bushes, tearing hard to wrench it free. How he crushed it to his nose, inhaled. There was something presumptuous about the gesture. It felt like an act of vandalism. Then Benoit was running over to them. The newcomer scooped him up and held him. I stood.
He doesn't like to be held by anyone but me.
Benoit, the traitor, turned his head to lick the stranger's hand.
Bonjour, Sophie, Nicholas said. This is Ben,
He's going to be living here, in the apartment on the third floor.
Proud. Showing off his friend like a new toy.
Pleased to meet you, madame.
He smiled then, a lazy smile that was somehow just as presumptuous as the way he'd ripped into that bush.
You will like me, it said. Everyone does.
Please, I said. Call me Sophie. The madame had made me feel about 100 years old, even though it was only proper.
Sophie.
Now I wished I hadn't said it. It was too informal, too intimate.
I'll take him, please.
I held out my hands for the dog. Benoit smelt faintly of petrol, of male sweat. I held him at a little distance from my body.
The concierge won't like that, I added, nodding at the moped, then toward the cabin.
She hates them. I'd wanted to assert myself, but I sounded like a matron scolding a small boy.
Noted, he said. Cheers for the tip. I'll have to butter her up, get her on side.
I stared at him. Why on earth would he want to do that?
Good luck there, Nick said. She doesn't like anyone.
Ah, he says.
But I like a challenge. I'll win her over. Well, watch out,
Nick said.
I'm not sure you want to encourage her. She has a knack for appearing round corners when you least expect it.
I didn't like the idea of it at all. That woman with her watchful eyes, her omnipresence. What might she be able to tell him if he did win her over? When Jacques got home, I told him I had met the new inhabitant of the third floor apartment. He frowned, pointed to my cheekbone.
You have dirt there.
I rubbed at my cheek. Somehow, I must have missed it when I had checked my appearance. I thought I had been so careful.
So what do you make of our new neighbor?
I don't like him. Jacques raised his eyebrows.
I thought he sounded like an interesting young man. What don't you like?
He's too charming. That charm. He wielded it like a weapon. Jacques frowned. He didn't understand. My husband, a clever man, but also arrogant. Used to having things his way, having power. I have never acquired that sort of arrogance. I've never been certain enough of my position to be complacent.
Well,
he said,
we'll have to invite him to drinks. Look him over.
I didn't like the sound of that, inviting him into our home. The first note arrived 2 weeks later. I know who you are, Madame Sophie Meunier. I know what you really are. If you don't want anyone else to know, I suggest you leave 2,000 euros beneath the loose step in front of the gate. The madame. A nasty little piece of faux formality. The mocking, knowing tone. No postmark. It had been hand-delivered. My blackmailer knew this building well enough to know about the loose step outside the gate. I didn't tell Jacques. I knew he would refuse to pay, for one thing. Those who have the most money are often the most close-fisted about handing it over. I was too afraid not to pay. I took out my jewelry box. I considered the yellow sapphire brooch Jacques had given me for our second wedding anniversary, the jade and diamond hair clips he gave me last Christmas. I selected an emerald bracelet as the fastest, because he never asked me to wear it. I took it to the pawnbroker, a place out in the banlieue, the neighborhoods outside the peripheric ring road that encircles the city. A world away from the Paris of postcards, of tourist dreams. I had to go somewhere no one could possibly recognize me. The pawnbroker knew I was out of my depth. I think he could sense my fear. Little did he know, it was less to do with the neighborhood than my horror at finding myself in this situation. The debasement of it. I returned with more than enough cash to cover it. Less than I should have got, though. 10 200-euro notes. The money felt dirty. The sweat of other hands, the accumulated filth. I slid the wedge of notes into a thick envelope, where they looked even dirtier against the fine cream card, and sealed them up, as though it would somehow make the fact of the money less horrific, less demeaning. I left it, as directed, beneath the loose step in front of the apartment building's gate. For the time being,
I had covered my debts. Perhaps you'll want to return to the third floor now, I tell the strange, scruffy girl, his sister. Hard to believe it. Hard, actually, to imagine him having had a childhood, a family at all. He seemed so discreet, as though he had stepped into the world fully formed. I didn't catch your name, she says. I didn't give it. Sophie Meunier, I say. My husband Jack and I live in the penthouse apartment, on this floor. If you're in the penthouse apartment, what's up there? She points to the wooden ladder. The entrance to the old chambre de bain, the old maid's quarters, in the eaves of the building. I nod my head in the other direction, towards the descending staircase. But I'm sure you'll want to get back to the third floor now. She takes the hint. She has to walk right by me to go back down. I don't move an inch as she passes. It is only when my jaw begins to ache that I realize how hard I have been gritting my teeth.
Jess. I close the apartment door behind me. I think of the way Sophie Meunier looked at me just now, like I was something she'd found on the sole of her shoe. She might be French, but I'd know her type anywhere. The shining black bob, the silk scarf, the swanky handbag. The way she stressed penthouse. She's a snob. It's not exactly a new feeling, being looked at like I'm scum. But I thought I sensed something else. Some extra hostility, when I mentioned Ben. I think of her suggestion that he might have gone away.
It's not a great time, he'd said on the phone.
But he wouldn't just up and go without leaving word. Would he? I'm his family. His only family. However put out he was, I don't think he would abandon me. But then, it wouldn't be the first time he's disappeared out of my life with little more than a backward glance. Like when suddenly he had some shiny new parents ready to whisk him away to a magical new life of private schools and holidays abroad, and family Labradors, and...
Sorry, but the Danielses are only looking to adopt one child. Actually, it can be best to separate children from the same family, especially when there has been a shared trauma. As I said, my brother's always been good at getting people to fall in love with him. Ben, driving away in the back seat of the Daniels' navy blue Volvo, turning back once, and then looking forward, onwards, to his new life.
No. He left me a voice note giving me directions, for Christ's sake. And even if he did have to leave for some reason, why isn't he answering any of my calls or texts? I keep coming back to the broken chain of his Saint Christopher, the bloodstains on the cat's fur, how none of Ben's neighbours seem prepared to give me the time of day. More than that, seem actively hostile. How it just feels like something here is wrong. I search Ben's social media. At some point, he seems to have deleted all his socials except Instagram. How have I only just realized this? No Facebook, no Twitter. His Instagram profile picture is the cat, which right now is sitting on its haunches on the desk, watching me through narrowed eyes. There isn't a single photo left on his grid. I suppose it's just like Ben, master of reinvention, to have got rid of all his old stuff. But there's something about the disappearance of all his content that gives me the creeps. Almost like someone's tried to erase him. I sent him a DM, all the same. Ben, if you see this, answer your phone. My mobile buzzes.
You have only 50 megabytes of roaming data remaining. To buy more,
Follow this link. Shit. I can't even get by on the cheapest plan. I sit down on the sofa. As I do, I realize I've sat on Ben's wallet. I must have tossed it here earlier. I open it and pull out the business card stuck in the front. Theo Mendelssohn, Paris editor, Guardian. And scribbled on the card. Pitch story to him. Someone Ben's working for, maybe. Someone he might have been in touch with recently. There's a number listed. A call, but it rings out, so I fire off a quick text. Hi, it's about my brother, Ben Daniels. Trying to find him. Can you help? I put the phone down. I just heard something odd. I sit very still, listening hard, trying to work out what the noise is. It sounds like footsteps passing down a flight of stairs. Except the sound isn't coming from in front of me, from the landing and the staircase beyond the apartment's entrance. It's behind my head. I stand up from the sofa and study the wall. And it's now, looking properly, that I see something there. I run my hands over the faded silk wall covering. There's a break, a gap in the fabric, running horizontally above my head and vertically down. I step back and take in the shape of it. It's cleverly hidden, and the sofa's pushed in front of it, so you wouldn't notice it at all unless you were looking pretty closely. But I think it's a door.
Sophie, penthouse. Back in the apartment, I reach into my handbag. Black leather Celine, ferociously expensive, extremely discreet. A gift from Jacques. Take out my wallet, and I'm almost surprised to find the note hasn't burned a hole through the leather. I cannot believe I was so clumsy as to drop it earlier. I'm never normally clumsy. Double the next time, bitch. It arrived yesterday morning, the latest in the series. Well, it has no hold over me now. I rip it into tiny pieces and scatter them into the fireplace. I pull the tasseled cord set into the wall, and flames roar into life, instantly incinerating the paper. Then I walk quickly through the apartment, past the floor-to-ceiling windows with their view out over Paris, along the hallway hung with its trio of Gerhard Richter abstracts, my heels tapping briefly over the parquet, then silenced on the silk of the antique Persian runner. In the kitchen, I open the pastel box from the boulangerie. Inside is a quiche Lorraine, studded with lardons of bacon. The pastry so crisp it will shatter at the slightest touch. The dairy waft of the cream and egg yolk briefly makes me want to gag. When Jacques is away from home on one of his business trips, I usually exist on black coffee and fruit. Perhaps the odd piece of dark chocolate, broken from a Maison Bonabas. I did not feel like going out. I felt like hiding in here away from the world. But I am a regular customer, and it is important to stick to the usual routines. A couple of minutes later, I open the door to the apartment again, and wait a few moments listening, looking down the staircase, making sure no one's there. You cannot do anything in this building without half expecting the concierge to appear from some dark corner, as if formed from the shadows themselves. But for once, it isn't her that I'm concerned about. It's this newcomer, this stranger. When I am certain I am alone, I walk across the landing to the wooden stairs that lead up to the old Chambre de Bon. I am the only one in the building with a key to these old rooms. Even the concierge's access to the public spaces of this building ends here. I fasten Benoit to the bottom rung of the wooden steps with his leash. He wears a matching set in blue leather from Hermès. Both of us, with our expensive Hermès collars. He'll bark if he sees anyone. I take the key out of my pocket and climb the stairs. As I put the key into the lock, my hand trembles a little. It takes a couple of attempts to turn. I push the door open. Just before I step inside, I check again that I am not being watched. I can't be too careful. Especially not with her here now, snooping around. I spend perhaps 10 minutes up here, in the Chambre de Bon. Afterwards, I lock the padlock again just as carefully, pocket the little silver key. Benoit is waiting for me at the bottom of the steps, looking up at me with those dark eyes. My secret keeper. I put a finger to my lips. Shh.
Jess. I grab hold of the sofa, drag it away from the wall. The cat jumps down from the desk and trots over, maybe hoping I'm going to reveal a mouse or some creepy crawlies. And yes, here it is. A door. No handle, but I get a hold of the edge, wedge my fingers into the gap and pull. It swings open. I let out a gasp. I don't know what I'd expected. A hidden cupboard, maybe. Not this. Darkness greets me on the other side. The air as cold as if I'd just opened a fridge. There's a smell of musty old air, like in a church. As my eyes adjust to the gloom, I make out a stone staircase, spiraling up and down, dark and cramped. It couldn't be more different from the grand sweeping affair beyond the apartment's main door. I suppose from the looks of it, this was probably some kind of servant staircase, like the maid's rooms Sophie Meunier told me about upstairs. I step inside and let the door swing closed behind me. It's suddenly very dark, but I notice a chink of light showing through the door. Slightly lower than head height. I crouch and put my eye to it. I can see into the apartment, the living area, the kitchen. It looks like some kind of homemade spy hole. I suppose it could always have been here, as old as the building itself. Or it could have been made more recently. Someone could have been watching Ben through here. Someone could have been watching me. I can still hear the footsteps heading downwards. I turn on my phone's flashlight and follow, trying not to trip over my own feet as the steps twist tightly around on themselves. This staircase must have been made for a time when people were smaller. I'm not exactly large, but it still feels like a tight squeeze. A second of hesitation. I have no idea where this might lead. I'm not sure this is the best idea. Could I even be heading towards some sort of danger? Well, it's not like that's ever stopped me before. I carry on downwards. I come to another door. Here, too, I spot another little spy hole. I press my eye to it quickly, look in. No sign of anyone about. I'm feeling a little disorientated, but I suppose this must be the second floor apartment, Ben's friend Nick's place. It looks like it might be pretty much the same layout as Ben's, but it's all whitewashed walls with nothing on them. Beyond the giant computer in the corner, some books. And what looks like a piece of exercise equipment. It's practically empty, with about as much character as a dentist's surgery. It seems Nick has barely moved in. The footsteps below me continue, urging me to follow. I carry on down, the light from my phone bouncing in front of me. I must be on the first floor now. Another apartment. And there it is, another spy hole. I look through. This place is a mess. Stuff everywhere. Empty sharing size crisp packets and overflowing ashtrays, side tables crowded with bottles, a standing lamp lying on its side. I take an involuntary step back as a figure looms into view. He's not wearing his parka, but I recognize him instantly. The guy from the gate. From that fight in the courtyard. Antoine. He appears to be swigging from a bottle of Jack Daniels. He drains the last dregs and lifts up the bottle. Jesus. I jump as he smashes it against the side table. He sways on the spot, looking at the jagged stump like he's wondering what to do with it. Then he turns in my direction. For a horrible moment, it feels like he's staring directly at me. But I'm peering through a chink only a few millimeters wide. There's no way he could possibly see me here. Right? I'm not going to hang around to find out. I hurry on down. I must be passing the ground floor level, the entrance hall. A further flight of steps. I think I'm underground now. The air feels heavier, colder. I can imagine the earth surrounding me. Finally, the staircase leads me to a door swinging on its hinges. Whoever I'm following has just stepped through it. My pulse quickens. I must be getting closer. I push through the door, and even though it's still just as dark on the other side, I have the impression of having stepped into a wide, echoing space. Silence. No sound of footsteps. Where can they have gone? I must only be moments behind. It's colder down here. It smells of damp, of mold. My phone throws only a very weak beam into the darkness, but I can see the orange glow of a light switch across from me. I press it, and the lights come on. The little mechanical timer clicking down. Tick, 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 tick. I've probably only got a couple of minutes before it goes dark again. I'm definitely in the basement. A wide, low-ceilinged space easily double the size of Ben's apartment. Several doors leading off it. A rack in the corner that holds a couple of bikes. And leaning against one wall is a red moped. I walk over to it, take out the set of keys I found in Ben's jacket, fit the Vespa one into the ignition, and turn. The lights hum on. It hits me. So Ben can't be away on his bike somewhere. I must have been leaning against it, because it tilts under me. It's now that I see that the front wheel is flat. The rubber completely shredded. An accident? But there's something about the total decimation that feels intentional. I turn back to the basement. Perhaps whoever it was has disappeared behind one of those doors. Are they hiding from me? A shiver of unease as I realize I may now be the one being watched. I open the first door. A couple of washing machines, one of which is on, all the clothes whizzing around in a colourful jumble. In the next room, I smell the bins before I see them, that sweetish, rotten scent. Something makes a scuffling sound. I shut the door. The next is some sort of cleaning cupboard, mops and brooms and buckets, and a pile of dirty-looking rags in the corner. The next one has a padlock on the door, but the door itself is open. I push inside. It's stuffed full of wine, racks and racks of it, floor to ceiling. There might be well over 1,000 bottles in here. Some of them look seriously old, labels stained and peeling, the glass covered in a layer of dust. I pull one out. I don't know much about wine. I mean, I've worked in plenty of bars, but they've been the sort of place where people ask for a large glass of red, love. and you get the bottle thrown in for an extra couple of quid. But this, it just looks expensive. Whoever's keeping this stuff down here clearly trusts their neighbours. And probably won't notice if just one little bottle goes missing. Maybe it'll help me think. I'll pick something that looks like it's been down here for ages. Something that they'll have forgotten about. I find the dustiest, most cobweb-covered bottles on the bottom racks. Search along the rows. Pull one out a little way. 1996. An image of a stately home picked out in gold. Chateau Blondin-Lavigne. The label reads. That'll do. The lights go out. The timer must have run down. I look for a light switch. It's so dark in here. I'm immediately disorientated. I step to the left and brush up against something. Shit. I need to be careful. I'm basically surrounded by teetering walls of glass. There. Finally, I spot the little orange glow of another light switch. I press it. The lights hum back on. I turn to find the door. That's odd. I thought I left it open. It must have swung shut behind me. I turn the handle. But nothing happens when I pull. The door won't budge. What the hell? That can't be right. I try it again. Nothing. And then again. Putting everything into it, throwing all my weight against it. Someone's locked me in. It's the only explanation.
Concierge, the lodge. Afternoon, and already the light seems to be fading, the shadows growing deeper. A rap on the door of my cabin. My first thought is that it's him, Benjamin Daniels. The only one who would deign to call on me here. I think of the first time he knocked on my door, taking me by surprise. Bonjour, madame. I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm moving in on the third floor. I suppose that makes us neighbors. I assumed at first that he was mocking me, but his polite smile said otherwise. Surely he had to know there was no world in which we were neighbors. Still, it made an impression. The knock comes again. This time I hear the authority in it. I realize my mistake. Of course it isn't him. That would be impossible. When I open the door, there she stands on the other side. Sophie Meunier, Madame to me, in all her finery. The elegant beige coat, the shining black handbag, the gleaming black helmet of her hair, the silk knot of her scarf. She's part of the tribe of women you see walking the smartest streets of the city, with shopping bags over their arms made from stiff card with gilded writing, full of designer clothes and expensive objets. A little pedigree dog at the end of a lead. The wealthy husbands with their sans-cassette affairs. The grand apartments and white-shuttered holiday homes on the Ile de Ré. Born here, bred here, from old French money. Or at least so they would like you to believe. Nothing gaudy. Nothing nouveau. All elegant simplicity and quality and heritage. Oui, madame? I ask. She takes a step back from the doorway, as though she cannot bear to be too close to my home, as though the poverty of it might somehow infect her. The girl, she says simply. She does not use my name. She has never used my name. I am not even sure she knows it. The one who arrived last night, the one staying in the third floor apartment. Oui, madame. I want you to watch her. I want you to tell me when she leaves, when she comes back. I want to know if she has any visitors. It is extremely important. Comprenez-vous? Understand? Oui, madame. Good. She is not much taller than I am, but somehow she manages to look down at me, as though from a great height. Then she turns and walks away as quickly as possible, the little silver dog trotting at her heels. I watch her go. Then I go to my tiny bureau and open the drawer, look inside, check the contents. She may look down upon me, but the knowledge I have gives me power, and I think she knows this. I suspect, even though she would never think to admit it, that Madame Meunier is a little afraid of me. Funny thing. We share more than meets the eye. Both of us have lived in this building for a long time. Both of us, in our own way, have become invisible, part of the scenery. But I know just what sort of woman Madame Sophie Meunier really is, and exactly what she is capable of.